I hope we've not caught you in the shunky or anything, Craig. You sound a bit echoey there, mate. You in the toilet? Oh, right, well, Derek, is that you?
I'm getting cold. I'll phone him later.
Oh, my God.
Catalogue of errors. Goulson gets ahead. Say that again.
Thanks again, boys. I'm waiting to look at the clips of James Tavernier.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
Manchester, brace yourself.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the next episode of the iReady podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek, and with me is my co-host Dave. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm very well, Derek. Absolutely fantastic. How are you?
I'm even better after the result on Saturday there.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to this podcast. Going over the game, it was absolutely tremendous.
Did you even get to see it since you were on holiday again, Dave?
Derek, I did. I was back home by that point, and I wasn't missing that game, so I definitely got to see it.
Yes. So we've got another guest tonight, and it's our recurring theme. He's going to become a podcast regular quite shortly, no doubt. But Craig from Fear No Foe Facebook group, welcome back to the pod.
Thanks very much for having me on, guys. And just similar to the last time, a common theme with me and David, I was on holiday at the same time as him this time. I've just been on holiday. True story. Me and the wife, we cut our holiday short by a day, because we realised their ferry home was going to be during the game. So we get the last ferry home on Friday night instead. that's dedication for you there, boys.
That definitely is, mate. Definitely. It's quite scary, actually, Craig, because I'll tell you later on, I'll know name and shame him on the pod, but actually, we were just down in Centre Parks, and one of the first people I met was a guy that we were at school with in Bullhouse Primary and then Grangemouth High School after that, which I couldn't quite believe. So, as Grangemouth folk get away, you kind of get away from us regardless where in the world that you go. So
I think Craig's just proven he's more staunch than Dave, so Dave, you're sacked. And Craig, you're coming in.
No problem. Happy to cancel the ferry for you, anything, guys.
That is staunch, I must admit. That is staunch.
Yes, so obviously we have got the Old Firm game against Celtic to cover, and before that we've got the Ross County game, so we may as well just batter on down the tunnel and go on to the pitch. So the first game we've got to cover was Sunday the 4th of October. It was a 2-0 win at home against Ross County in the Premiership. Four changes from the Galatasaray game. We lined up McLaughlin, Tavernier, Goldson, Balogun, Barisic, Kamara, Jack, Arfield, Jones, Kent and Morelos. On the subs bench, we had McGregor, Bassey, Edmondson, Hadji, Defoe, Davis, Patterson, Barker and Barjonas. The ref was Greg Aitken, and Douglas Ross was running the line in this game as well, so taking a wee break from his head Tory duties, wasn't he? Probably the less said about that, the better.
Exactly.
So the first half, I'll cover it in a bit more depth, but the first half was quite a subdued first half. There was a lot of possession, but we're not doing a great deal with it. Doing the usual probing, slow build-up, looking for the perfect shot, allowing Ross County a lot of time to regroup. We largely controlled the first half, but Ross County were quite dangerous on occasion as well, and they were exploiting the right wing and any defensive frailties that Barisic have shown in the last few games. So certainly a bit to be concerned about, but certainly we came out of the first half up 1-0 anyway. So in the second minute, it was a dangerous cross from the right by Ross County, flashed across the goal, nobody picked it up. 8th minute, Barisic with a free kick from 25 yards on the right, off the wall and out for the corner. And in the 16th minute, it was a penalty to us after our coming together with Morelos and the defender in the box. Didn't look much in it from the replays, which were largely pished by RTV again, but a penalty nonetheless. And up steps Tavernier, sends the keeper the wrong way on the 16th minute, put the ball to the left and made it 1-0.
Craig, I'll let you speak about your hero before I come in there.
Listen, no, my hero, but all I'm going to say, guys, here, leadership comes to mind, you know, a game where I think we'll talk about how we were pretty poor on the day, to be fair. And the captain stepping up to take the pressure off when we won the looking likely. And I think that's something we've seen now pretty regular for Tav this season. He certainly seems to have kicked on a gear. Delighted for him. Good to see him back in penalties and confident again.
Yep, can't say much more than that. But I'm not going to take back anything I've said about him, because if I day and start saying he's absolutely brilliant, he'll probably end up going back to the way he was last season. So I'm still going to stick by what I said, because ever since he's done that, he's been absolutely outstanding. But no, he has confidence is high now, and as you say, stepped up and slotted it away. And at that point, Derek, I thought, well, that's us. We've not played particularly well, but that's going to maybe give us a wee boost to go on and try and get another one before half time, hopefully. But unfortunately, as you're about to get into it, didn't quite work out like that.
No, quite, no. 20th minute, Jones down the right, puts in a great cross into the middle of the box. Morelos gets his head to it, but not enough power in it. 21st minute, free kick from about 30 yards on the right. Barisic again deflected off the wall and out for the corner. The resulting corner was deep into the box. Goldson got his head to it, but went well over the bar. 26th minute, Arfield tries to pass to Morelos on the edge of the box, but the ball was intercepted by the defender and comes loose. Morelos picks up the ball on the edge of the box, shows strength to fend off the defender, makes some space for himself and shoots with a low effort at pace, but is right at the keeper, who got down to it fairly cleanly. So at least it was a decent effort on target as well. Maybe that's something that he's needing. There's a lot of chances like that. Even if he doesn't score with them, bring his confidence back, because yeah, he certainly has been lacking this season. As much as some of his play outside of the goal area has been brilliant, his kind of shooting has been a bit poor this season so far.
I know, you're spot on, Derek, but as I say, just even staying involved and still causing problems, you know, hoping, fingers crossed, that the goals will start to to come. But we know just with everything that's been happening, maybe it's not been the right time for him. But just like what you said, as long as he's still getting involved and still causing problems, then that's hoping that's just going to come on for that.
I totally agree. I think the goals will come again for Alfie. I think the most important thing for the team is that he's contributing now and we're winning games. I think it's only a matter of time before he starts to get amongst them again.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a different role he's playing this year. I would have said he's dropping deep, dropping further back. He's getting more in amongst the play. I mean, you've seen him on the game on Saturday there, which we'll get into. He was down in our box at some occasions as well. So his chances potentially are maybe limited because he is doing another job. But obviously, the transfer speculation again has played into his mind, which we'll obviously get into the transfer window later on. But in the 30th minute, it was good patient play in and around the box, ending in Tavernier playing a lovely through ball into the box to Arfield on the right-hand side. He tried to dink it over the keeper, but ends up going well over the bar. 32nd minute, great corner from the left by Barisic into the centre of the box. Goldson towers above the defence and headers it just over the bar. And the last piece of play in the first half, a lot of possession in the 40th minute, in and around the box, still trying to find the perfect angle. Kent ended up having a shot just outside the box on the right, and it was deflected out for the corner. And that's how the half ended. So, as I said, a bit subdued, but we were pretty much largely in control of the half. So 1-0 up going into half time. It's against Ross County, maybe expecting a wee bit more, but every game's a cup final to these teams these days.
No, you're quite right, and I think we were just hoping and praying it wasn't going to be a bit of a European hangover, you know, because of the previous result that we'd had against Galatasaray. Everybody was everybody was having a lift, and it was just, we've seen it happen before, Derek, haven't we? It's just, the team have maybe been, off guard slightly, and, a team have surprised us and stuff. So we were hoping that, at least the defence was going to remain in control and keep the clean sheet, just hoping to get that second goal to kill the game off. But it was proving difficult, especially at half time. But thankfully, we were one up at that point.
No, again, I think similar to you're saying there, guys, I was pretty confident going into the second half. What a goal up, you're expecting maybe a wee volley for the manager and a wee reaction in the second half. But as we'll probably go into in a bit of detail, it didn't really materialise, and it's probably the game, few games this season where we looked a wee bit shaky at times in the second half at the back. I got a wee bit nervous, and it should, at the end of the day, we kick on and get the 3 points, which I suppose is the most important thing.
Absolutely. So into the second half on the 50th minute, ball worked out to the right wing after some good quick play. Taft plays a lovely daisy cutter crossed on the deck to Morelos in the middle of the box, who controls it with one foot. Defender nips in and gets the ball before he could shoot. Arguably slow play from Morelos there, just a wee bit more sharpness needed. 53rd minute, Kent brought down on the right on the edge of the box. Phil continued into the box, so should have been a penalty. Probably one of the contentious decisions of the game.
Yeah.
55th minute, corner in from the right, Balogun loses his marker and gets a low volley on it for a keeper to make a great save to tip it over the bar out for the corner. Very unlucky that bit of play there.
Yep.
56th minute, Kamara plays a good ball into the box on the left for Morelos in space, however hits it over the bar. 58th minute, Barisic goes off injured after an innocuous challenge to try and stop a cross, completely accidental. He did come back on for treatment quite fortunately though. 62nd minute, Tavernier with a free kick from 25 yards on the left, but off the wall and out for the corner. 63rd minute, Kent caught in possession in the middle of the park. A quick break up the park by Ross County. The attacker passed to the attacker in space, but he fluffed it. Very, very lucky for us, I think. It'd be a bit more composed. That could have been almost a certain goal. A double substitution made on the 64th minute. Barisic and Jack off, Bassey and Hadji on. And then the 70th minute, Jones off and Barker on. And that kind of changed the game slightly, I think, with Barker coming on.
Yeah, no, well, as you're about to get into it, it did, but we were needing a wee something different up front, weren't we? It was starting to go a bit stale, you know, we were, you know, plugging away, there was nothing coming off, we just needed something, you know, a wee sort of different style of play, and, you know, I'm sure as you're about to get into it, you know, it did pay off, and it was a fantastic substitution by the manager.
Done a great sub. I think we talked about it in the last pod I was on, guys. I think the sort of narrative around Barker is maybe starting to change a wee bit. He's definitely starting to contribute. The management team certainly trust him, but we're now actually, you know, starting to see results in the pitch, which is good for the guy. And as I say, he definitely brought something different in the game that was kind of petering out and looking a wee bit ropey at times. You know, it was good.
Yep. 76th minute, was a long high ball into the box to find Morelos. The defender nips in and heads the ball, but the keeper had come off his line and it just went wide of his own goal, so nearly a fortunate OG for us there. 79th minute, free kick to Ross County after a great challenge by us, so it never should have been anyway. It was a long free kick into the box and a close range header just over the bar by the Ross County attacker. Again, another dangerous piece of play there from County. 81st minute, Hadji crosses in from the right to the back post. Goldson gets a head to it back into the centre of the box and Bassey has an overhead kick just wide of the post. 82nd minute, last substitution of the game for us, Kent off and Davis on. And the 88th minute, Barker scores to make it 2-0. Hadji with a great ball over the top. Morelos was offside, so checks his run. Great awareness from Morelos for a change, because he normally just wades in offside. Barker picks the ball up, gets into the box on the right, cuts inside, beats two players and then shoots to the right and into the back of the net. And a birthday goal for him as well.
It was a great goal, Derek. Absolutely brilliant. And just, you know, to go on what Craig said a minute ago there, I think the vast majority of supporters have been underwhelmed by Barker, and I don't mean by his play or his contribution, just for the fact that he's not a sort of big name player or anything like that, you know, a guy that was on loan at Hibs a couple of years ago and stuff like that, but he has definitely grown on me anyway. I mean, I think that the contribution that he puts in, he's not an elite winger, he's not a Ryan Kent type player, he is a very good winger for the Premier League in Scotland, and he will have a lot of periods that he'll go very quiet and you'll not get much out of him, but then you will get moments of brilliance from him like that, you know, which is a game changer, and his pace is frightening as well, and that was just an excellent goal for him. Brilliant control, great awareness, and then the finish at the end, just absolutely brilliant. And I think, you know, the relief, even although there was nobody in the stadium, you could feel the relief for all the supporters, especially on social media and stuff like that, when we finally got the second goal, because there was a lot of people were worried that there was going to be an upset or something was going to happen. But when you look back at it, the defence really, you know, there was a couple of times that there was a few wee sort of, squeaky bum moments, but you know, when you look back on it in full, you know, we were in control of the match really, and we didn't have that much to worry about. But I'm afraid when you're, you know, when you're only 1-0 up, these things do creep into your mind. But thankfully Barker put that to bed, and as you said, Derek, a great for him to score on his birthday as well. Absolutely brilliant goal.
I think another thing about the goal as well was that, obviously Yanis Hadji's kind of contribution to it. It was one of the things that in the game that I felt was a miss with it with the selection. I think that's the kind of game where, especially at Ibrox, you know, Hadji's a man I'd be starting more often than not in the games, in terms of that, you know, the kind of that extra wee bit of creativity he does give us in and around the box. Although the chances we were creating were either kind of self-made or doing the wings, and I think obviously Hadji can obviously unlock that wee pass that nobody else really kind of seems to see, and I think his substitution at the game was obviously just as important as Barker, and as I say, it made the result look comfortable and probably more deserving of the fact that we were in control of the game, so we got that kind of fair reflection. But I think the most important thing for me with that game was that it's Ross County at Ibrox. It's a routine win, and we seem to be making the routine games routine, which is good.
Yeah.
I think it's always, we've just got to get the goal, the second goal. That's always been my concern in terms of being 1-0. I know these teams shouldn't cause us many problems, which is obviously no disrespect to them, but we should be beating them more comfortably. And as much as we were playing fairly well and we were controlling it, you've always got that thing in the back of your mind, maybe not so much this year, but it's kind of the hangover from last year of we were prone to making these defensive blunders at times, and it cost us games and it cost us points. And touch wood, so far this season we've not done that. We've completely cut out these stupid mistakes, and we're getting the second goal when we need to. Granted, this game was fairly late in the day, but you know, it turned out, as you said, Craig, more justified in terms of how well we had played in the game. Yep. With a 2-0. So, and the last piece of play in the game was on the 92nd minute, with Ross County having a corner from the right. It was a free header from about 6 yards, and it went just wide. Keeper was beaten if it was on target as well, so kind of fortunate we got the second goal there just in case. But kind of fairly comfortable, maybe a wee bit more touchy than it should have been with getting the late goal. But, you know, 3 points, clean sheet, no injuries. Got to see that as a bonus.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that he did change it, you know, in the defence as well, Derek. I mean, we have been impressed by Balogun when he's came into the team. But the fact that he has, you know, changed it about again, and we have got another clean sheet, it is excellent. And as you quite rightly said, Derek, I think the mentality this year seems to be different. These routine games where we have struggled before, you know, we seem to have that wee more, you know, a bit extra grit about us to, you know, to grind out a result, which, you know, has been sadly missing over the last two seasons, and long may it continue, because it's games like that that win you the league. It's no the four Old Firm games that win you a season. It's these matches that win you a season. And, you know, the longer we go on getting the 3 points and, you know, keeping clean sheets is, you know, absolutely brilliant.
Definitely, I think the clean sheets are the real plus point for me. That gives you a nice kind of solid base to build from. You know, I think we'll always create chances, and we're spreading goals around the team. But I think the really pleasing thing so far this season is that we're pretty watertight at the back. You're going to win more games than you lose if that's the case, you know.
Yep. So, 3 points, we headed off into the international break. We don't normally cover these things here, and you know, we're not going to start now. So, so always a pain in the arse time, international break.
I know you love international football, Derek.
You know, hitting a wee vein of form again, and, you know, we get stopped in our tracks. Yeah. And we've got another one coming up in November as well, which is another pain in the arse, but we'll deal with that when it comes. But the big game we've got to talk about here was just on Saturday the 17th of October, a 2-0 win away against Celtic in the Premiership. Just a fantastic result, a fantastic performance. The narrative, though, was set in motion for about 2 weeks, though, on the run-up to the game, with Celtic always wanting the game to be postponed. I think they've wanted that postponed ever since, you know, the fixtures got announced. This is the reason why we're playing the first Celtic game in October, for the fact that they got what they wanted. The irony is, you know, they've had a lot of COVID-related issues. They've had a lot of injuries as well. And had they not pushed to get this postponed until October, they wouldn't have had as many issues. So, but the narrative was set. They were still at it in the run-up to the game. They wanted fans in the stadium, which we all do, don't get us wrong, and I kind of see their point there, but they were wanting the game fully postponed by the look of it. Their players either started getting COVID or having to self-isolate. The internationals, we all know, were daft to go ahead anyway. The media were falling over themselves to toe the party line that Celtic were putting in a depleted squad. It was worked out after the game that their starting lineup was worth around £56 million. Ours was worth 20. When they could put in, you know, players at, you know, £3.5 million as a backup player, you know, that's not a second string team. That's not a depleted squad. Frank McAvaney came out with some absolute fucking tripe about the referee putting pressure again. And this is where the SFA need to start clamping down. As much as Frank McAvaney will not be employed by Celtic, he's clearly toeing the party line, and he came up with a ridiculous shocking line saying, "I hope there were mistakes being made the last time."
Yeah, well, I mean, Derek, let's be honest. This is a club who, you know, have been despicable in the past at trying to get games, you know, postponed. We spoke about this many times. I mean, they used the death of a former player, you know, to get a game postponed because they had players suspended and injured, and it worked out for them, you know. So it really didn't surprise me at all that they would try every sort of trick, you know, in the book to, you know, to make sure that this game was more favourable for them. And as you say, it didn't work out for them, because if the game had been played when it should have been played, you know, they might have had a lot more players available for them. The whole thing with the ex-players and things like that, it's always going to be, we know what the media in this country are like. They will jump onto anything to try and make a story, to try and make some sort of sob story towards them. It's this whole always cheated, never defeated attitude that's always been there. So it didn't surprise me in the slightest. And they basically got everything that they deserved. And going back as well to, you know, this narrative about them having their reserve team out, that's why you go out and buy players, Derek. That's why you go and bring players into your squad. You don't bring a player into your squad not to play him. Do you know what I mean? You don't, you know, go and get these players to say, well, he's a reserve player, he's never going to get his game. So that doesn't wash with me whatsoever. If we had sort of two or three players out, I would be expecting us, you know, the players that we've got in reserve to come in and do a job for us. So that just doesn't wash with me at all.
I think it was absolutely beautiful, actually, that the masters of the dark arts, you know, when they get beat at their own game, basically. As you said, you alluded to there, the amount of tricks that was pulled with, let's get the fixtures changed and push the old firm game back, and let's get fans in. Oh no, we're not getting fans in, let's try and get it pushed back again. And then suddenly, obviously, their players start falling down with COVID, which is going to happen, you know what I mean? We're in the middle of a global pandemic. It'll happen to all the teams. It's happened to St Mirren, other teams, Kilmarnock, and no sympathy was given out. Fuck it, you know what I mean? They've got a squad. It's a level playing field. It's 11 versus 11 at the end of the day. And we had players missing as well. All right, it wasn't COVID-related, but, you know, our main summer signing, Kamal Roof, was injured. We've got the likes of Aribo just coming back. It just doesn't wash. It just feels like almost the old paranoia that they've got. Rangers are applying a bit of pressure and they don't like it. They like it when they've got it easy and they can rock up at Ibrox or Parkhead and roll us there 5-0. And now the days are gone. They can't deal with it. So, fuck it. Great. It was brilliant. We'll talk about it in a minute. We pissed oil them and never got to second gear. It was great.
No. I mean, the last thing I want to say, and I don't want to keep speaking about Celtic at all, but a team who are arguably in the biggest season of their history, and they're going for allegedly 10 in a row or 9.5 in a row or whatever you want to call it, you don't bring in a sports psychologist to a team that are all full of confidence in their playing. They are rattled, and that is the reason, that is the only reason why they wanted the game postponed, because they were obviously, with all the players, they keep claiming that they were out injured and all that kind of thing. They were getting their excuses in early because they have been rattled. They've been found out over the last season and a half by us. We've played them off the park 3 out of the 4 games, I think, we've played in the last wee while. So, but anyway, due to COVID, there was fears of people going to each other's houses since all the pubs were closed, and there was calls by MSPs and Nicola Sturgeon for Sky to make the game free to air. Really, I don't think they have a clue about economics and finances, and it's quite clear that was never going to happen. Rather strangely, though, and annoyingly, Steven Gerrard backed that call as well. That was never going to happen. I mean, I think it was described as the crown jewels of Scottish football. You're never going to air that for free because it's a kick in the face to people who do subscribe to Sky and they've already paid for it, yet other people are going to get it for nothing. So, a bit daft that, wasn't it?
As you say, Derek, it was a bit of a sort of fairy tale dream, for that to happen. But I can see, you know, the reason why that they were saying that they wanted it to happen. But just exactly like you said, for the, you know, tens of hundreds of thousands of people who, you know, subscribed to Sky Sports and had paid, you know, so that they could watch these games, it would be a complete slap in the face, and there's no way that Sky could do that to their customers. So, you know, I was the same as you. It was never going to happen for me.
No.
I'm not going to really add anything else, guys, because I'm not going to launch into an anti-SNP rant on your podcast. So we'll keep it with football.
It's just Derek that does that. That's all.
Nah, well, as I say, I'm an invited guest, so we'll let Derek crack on with the game, will we?
Yes, so there was 4 changes from the Ross County game. McGregor, Tavernier, Hellander, Goldson, Davis, Kent, Kamara, Morelis, Barker, Barisic and Arfield. On the subs bench, we had McLaughlin, Bassey, Hadji, Jack, Defoe, Itten, Aribo, Jones and Balogun. So one of the kind of concerns that's been over the past wee while is when Jack and Kamara play together, you're playing two largely defensive players in the same team. This was obviously different. We were looking to arguably go for it from the off, and that's kind of what we've done to an extent. And don't forget, Jack had played, he was coming back for a slight knock, I think, and he had played just on the Wednesday night as well for Scotland. So, and he ran the show as far as I could hear. So, but we were knocking the ball about well in the early stages. Celtic were pressing us. We were doing the same to them. On the 6 minutes, Celtic down the left, got the cross off on the deck. It was dangerous, but Hellander cleared it. Rangers were quick down the park on the break from that. Morelis on the right gets a break of the ball, puts in a great cross on the deck, but nobody there. Falls to Barisic at the back post, who hits a shot, but slices it wide. So, bit of back and forward early on, but certainly well defended when we needed to there.
Yeah, it was a brilliant clearance there, sort of tackle clearance by Hellander. And at that point, Derek, when that happened, I thought, he is going to have a great game. I just had a feeling, you know, it's always great to get the first tackle in, but for it to be a tackle which could, you know, have created a goal, or for them to score the goal, for him to get that in early, showed, you know, that he was well up for it. And I thought to myself at that point, he's going to be brilliant for us. And I was correct, because I thought we'll get on to all the players that were big, but you know, for that moment on, I think that Hellander really bossed the defence big time. And then, as you say, for us to go straight down, I was actually really disappointed that Barisic never got that on target, because it's not as if he is we've seen how accurate he can be with crosses and taking free kicks and things like that, and he had more time, actually, I think, than what he actually thought he did. And I was very disappointed that he never made the keeper pull a save, and going by the keeper that they've got in, it could well have been a goal if they'd have got it on target, you know. So I was quite disappointed at that stage, but, you know, feeling a bit more confident at that point.
I think Hellander, you're right, he kind of set the tone right there, in terms of, you know, doesn't matter what you're going to throw at us today, we're going to deal with it. He's a throwback, you know. It's really, really nice to actually have a defender who is really good at defending. You know what I mean? His reading of the game is excellent. And you feel confident going into these games with having that, as I say, that solid base. And that kind of set the mood for the entire game. It just became a recurring theme, you know, time after time. And if they did give us anything, we dealt with it fairly comfortably, you know.
Well, going from one defender defending well, we're going to another defender scoring well. So on the 9th minute, Goldson made it 1-0. There was a long free kick into the box by Tavernier on the right. Goldson loses his marker in the middle of the box and has a glancing header into the back of net. A fantastically worked goal and just brilliant from Goldson, just all round there, losing his marker and putting the header in. And I never heard it myself because I was watching RTV, but apparently the first question at halftime was it even a free kick in the first place?
Going back, it doesn't surprise me. Going back to the actual goals, as you say, Derek, straight off the training ground, that one. The fact that he was behind, you know, he was able just to pivot at the last second and lost his man very easily. And just the glimpse of a header, absolutely perfect pinpoint accuracy past the goalkeeper and in. Fantastic start for us. And you could tell that they were absolutely rocked as soon as that went. And you could see what was happening in their faces. They were all looking at each other, the Celtic players, looking for somebody to blame. And I could just tell straight away there was no way we were going to get beat after a score in that goal.
I think if they're looking for somebody to blame, Dave, I think they could maybe start with the goalkeeper. I mean, he's got holes in his gloves. I mean, as you say, it was a great delivery for Tavernier. And as I say, it was a lovely header, but you know we're dealing with, you know, a goalkeeper that's cost like the best chunk of £5 million or whatever they paid for him, and you know he just like it almost right through him. He looks abysmal. You know, they've seriously traded down with the goalkeeper, which is good for us. But I think the pleasing thing for Rangers' point of view is, we're a threat for set pieces. We've seen it away in, when we played Willem II in Holland as well. Goldson and Hollander are a threat in there. So not only are these guys doing the job at the back, but they're chipping in with goals, which is again going to be vital over the season. If we can get 5 or 6 goals out each of our centre halves, it will bode well. And then I say in the biggest game of the season against them, aye, it was a great goal. Great goal. We'll have a headed goal. I didn't get enough hit these days.
So a minute after that, great one-touch passing in and around the box. Morelos with a lovely dink ball over the defender to Tavernier on the right, who has a blistering volley but just went wide. 13th minute, ball played to Kent down the right, cuts inside, takes on his man, drops the shoulder, hits a shot, but a bit of a trundler and easy for the keeper. 14th minute, a long ball played up into our defence. Goldson headers it but gets lost and loses the ball. Falls to the attacker who tries to lob the keeper but puts it over the bar. That was probably the one poor effort there from Goldson in the whole game. A bit of a mistake. It can happen to anyone, though, where the ball gets played up into the air and you just lose the ball for some reason. But not going to hold that much against them after what he done in this game.
No.
I think it's a positive note, though. See the move you talked about there with obviously Tav's volley. Yeah, that would have been a brilliant goal. See the moves leading up to that was really us at our best. And everybody well drilled, kind of interchanging, nice kind of quick one touch passes, and then you know just that wee bit of guile for Morelos in the box. That would have been a brilliant goal, and that to me really struck a difference in the game. You know, when we were really controlled, but when we wanted to play, we kind of showed them that we could, you know. Yeah. I mean, we almost were toying with them, you know, we were proving they're going, you know, if you hit us with something, you know, so you talk about Goldson's mistake there, you know, if they had scored there, you'd have been confident that we had gears to move through. And I think that kind of missed it for them, that kind of cemented that doubt that you could see all over the pitch. You know, they're like, Rangers aren't even going full tilt here, and they couldn't get near us. It was beautiful.
And another thing that gets me as well, and I've noticed it over the last three games, but even going back to when we initially had him on loan and he scored into them, the game that we got beat at Parkhead, not last season, but the season before that we should never got beat. And I don't care what anybody said, they panic every time Ryan Kent's got the ball at his feet and he's running at them. They can't stop him. It's great for us to have a player that can do that against them. You can see the panic in them, and for some reason Kent's game just goes to another level every time he plays against them, because I thought, especially in the first half, every time that he was getting the ball and he was just facing them, he looked as if he could just skip past any of them and cause bother. And I just thought, you know, at that point in the game, the sort of first, you know, the sort of opening third of the game, I thought Ryan Kent was tremendous for us. He really looked dangerous every single time he got in the ball.
Absolutely, yep.
Yep. On the 19th minute, Morelos gives the ball away near the Celtic box. Celtic broke up the park and some poor attempted challenges from us were just backed off them as well. Celtic got the cross on the deck from the right, blocked and cleared by Tavernier right to the edge of the box to a Celtic player who tried to have a shot but blocked and cleared by Goldson. So good defending in the end, but we should have maybe stifled it out before then. 35th minute, Barker and Barisic robbed the ball from the Celtic player on the near side touchline deep in the Celtic half, got the ball to Kent on the edge of the box who tries to make space, tries to shoot but blocked, falls to Morelos who tries to cross it in but deflected it out for the corner. And then the last 5-10 minutes of the half, Celtic seemed to gain a wee bit more confidence and have a lot more possession and we became a bit sloppy. But that kind of ended the half. It was a decent first half from us. As we've kind of said, never got out of second gear. We were clearly the better of the two teams on the whole. Yep. A lot of possession, a lot of clever, quick play, but doing little up front with it. As I said, Celtic seemed to gain more confidence in the last 5-10 minutes of the half, and they had more possession. That coincided with us becoming sloppy, having a number of poor passes. It also coincided, though, with Morelos becoming more wound up. He had a few niggly fouls, a playful slap of the back of the head of Scott Brown, which was comedy, some of the memes that have came out after that. He had a decent first 30-35 minutes, roaming around the front line from left to right, dropping deep on occasion when he had to. And as I've said before, is perhaps an issue with our lack of chances was not having him up front there on occasion. Other than the goal, we never offered too much up front. Celtic had two dangerous crosses and, as I said, they were snuffed out by the defence. A number of players were playing well, however Barker looked about a yard off the pace in this game so far, and I think he was brought in for that pace that he's known for as well. So but overall, good half.
No, it was Derek, and you've actually. I was going to sort of comment on that as well. I did think that Barker was lost a wee bit after us, you know, saying how well you know he does. But again, going back to what I said the previous game, he's going to be one of these types of wingers that does go missing for big parts of a game and doesn't do much, and then you know he'll produce something. That's kind of what I was hoping he was going to do, because he had been pretty quiet and hadn't had a lot of the ball. And I had sort of said to myself, you know, if Morelos was playing a bit further forward than he was on his game, think of the amount of damage that we would do. And that's where I was kind of thinking at that point. I was getting a wee bit worried about Morelos, as you say. He was starting to get involved. You could tell that the likes of Scott Brown was going to come out and try and get him wound up and vice versa. And I thought to myself, this is not the time that we need to be losing a player. And I was a wee bit concerned about him, maybe, you know, the referee catching him doing something, because he did have a few wee flicks, a few wee kicks, a few wee pushes and stuff like that. And it's big games like that you need to have all your players on the park. And I just was a wee bit concerned at that point for him.
I was pretty relaxed about Alfie's antics, to be fair. To me, he kind of epitomised the performance a wee bit. It was a bit of a role reversal for them, you know, in terms of the Brown slap. I mean, it was a tapped head, right? But you seen Brown's reaction, you know what I mean? He didn't like it. You know, they were rattled. And we've fell foul to that kind of shithousery in the past. You know, our players have taken the bait. And I think, to be honest, the way Morelos was going about, just, you know, just being a bit cute with Duffy and that at the back, it just added to the fact that they were just never comfortable. It was either, right, we'll get in your face and we'll rough you a wee bit, or we'll just stand off and watch you passing the ball at the park, you know. I thought Morelos, it was great. I thought he was measured in it. He was clever. You know, he wasn't raising hands and getting in people's faces and you know, gesticulating with the ref and whatever. I think it was just cute kind of forward play and, you know, almost playing them at their own game, and they didn't like it, you know what I mean? And I'm absolutely fine with Alfie when he does that. I think you take that out of his game and you lose a lot. Yeah, I thought he was fine, to be fair.
Possibly different referee. I know if the likes of Kevin Clancy had been officiating with that, he would have been watching them the whole time. Do you know what I mean? And that's when you start to worry, because you know that he's been sent off and booked numerous occasions in the past for absolutely nothing. So that was just my only fear about it. But thankfully, it never came to anything.
I think you described it well there in terms of calling it shithousery, because if you remember when Morelos got, did he get sent off with when a couple of Old Firm games ago when Scott Brown kind of raked his leg at the back and then Morelos reacted? So that's maybe what he was looking for, and I think shithousery is probably the best way to describe it. So, but anyway, into the second half, looking for more of the same, and the player we were not long speaking about there, Barker, and the 52nd minute had some lovely determined play in midfield. He took the ball on, beats his man, an outstanding reverse pass through the defence to the on-running Kent, who was coming down the left wing, gets the ball, takes it into the box, but a great recovery by the defence and out for the corner. So that was the whole move was just worthy of a goal there, so it was quite unlucky. However, the resulting corner on the 53rd minute was not dealt with, and we ended up scoring our second goal, and Goldson gets his brace. It was some lovely passing in and around the box after the initial corner wasn't dealt with. Cross in on the deck, which is deflected into the path of our player. Ball ends up falling to Goldson, who has a shot. It was a good block by Duffy, falls back to Goldson, who pokes it through Duffy, who was still on the deck. And initially, I thought, I think like everybody, that it just kind of rebounded back off Goldson, but no, he actually had to, you know, have a wee nip at the ball as well to poke it past the Duffy and into the back of the net. But it was an instinctive poacher's reaction, that from Goldson. Fantastic. And I thought that was it. Game over right there.
Yep. No, Derek, absolutely, totally just like what you said, because it wasn't a great view of the goal that we got for the, you know, the camera angle. And I thought, like you, he'd hit a shot, it rebounded, then hit him and went in again. But actually, when they got it for a different angle, you could see that he saw it coming back, and he was able just to guide it in past the keeper. And again, it was like slow motion, wasn't it? You know, the second shot, it seemed to take an age to get into the back of the net. And just after that, they just collapsed. Celtic just collapsed. You could see the total anguish on every single one of their faces as they all looked at each other to try and blame somebody for it. A comedy errors for us, but great awareness by Goldson, and that was us. We were never looking back after that. Absolutely tremendous.
Again, I think, you know, another theme of that goal was just that obviously it was a very nice build-up and the lead-up to the corner, as you guys rightly said, and it made a great goal itself. Probably the corner was slightly overhit, but the way we pressed and won the ball back, and then some nice football kind of on the right hand side. It was just a theme of, we were just passing it around about them. They had absolutely no answer. Their new defender, Laxalt, he kind of summed the goal up for me, where he's kind of waving his hands about at the centre halves, because there's three or four of them in the middle of the box here, and just big Gunnar Goldson himself just prodding it through Duffy's legs, and they as you say, they've got their hands in the air and totally perplexed. They just had no answer. You know, it was, but again, the lead up play to the goal could easily be lost. And again, Alfredo himself, no in the box, you'd be expecting your striker to be where Goldson was, but he's actually out getting involved in the play with Arfield, and I'm sure it was Kamara who was excellent on the day. So no, it was, I thought it was a great goal, and it was game over. You were supremely confident after that, as you say.
Yep. Not long after that, 61st minute, Barker off and Jack on, a really sensible move there. 65th minute, good ball down the left to Barisic, took the ball, lovely cross into the middle of the box, the unmarked Kent, who took the ball and had a lovely shot, but is blocked out for the corner. Very unlucky, and a great move that. Celtic were stretched at that point because they were obviously trying to push for it, and we were finding the space down the back, which was great. 68th minute, Arfield with a volley outside the box, on target but slow pace, and didn't make the keeper work enough. 80th minute, it was a chance for Celtic where they drove the ball through the middle, a lovely ball through and a dummy by their attacker. Griffiths gets the ball, he had just come on as a sub not long ago. He got the ball, into the box, rounds McGregor, who was alert, and he came right out to meet the ball. Griffiths had taken the ball too far. However, he tried to, I don't know if it was a shot or a cross. Certainly, I think they've got no shots on target. So no. I don't think it was a shot. And it was right at McGregor who collects the ball. A dangerous piece of play. Had it not been somebody who is largely unfit and has only played 14 minutes of football this season so far, it might have been a different story and an edgy last 10 minutes, but...
The slightly worrying thing about that chance, Derek, and it was really the only opportunity that they had, it came just because nobody put in any pressure on the defender. I think it was Christopher Ayer that had sort of stepped out of defence past the halfway line and basically just played a ball straight through. That was maybe the only disappointing bit at that point. There was, you know, he was allowed to do that unchallenged. But I really can't say anything bad about our midfield because all three I thought were absolutely tremendous on the day. So, you know, it never came to anything. It certainly wasn't a shot at goal. He tried to play it back across the face of the goal. But McGregor, outstanding reaction and knew exactly where he was going to put the ball. He was able to reposition his body to get back in and safely pick the ball up. So, you know, it was fine. Just that one wee sort of concerning part. But, you know, these things do happen and thankfully nothing came of it.
No, totally superb for Griggs, actually, to, you know, put his cup of tea down long enough to, to come out and prevent that. I think he was probably delighted to get a bit of action. He'd done enough. He was, as you say, he was quick to react and he pushed the player wide. So we'll give credit to him there. And I think just he's alluded to it a wee bit with earlier on with Kent's chance there. I don't know if he's picked up in comments. I think the most alarming thing in the entire game, it was described as a great clearance by Ayer. Nothing about it. He knew absolutely nothing about it.
It was
a brilliant strike.
That would have been a tremendous goal if it had came off. The pinpoint accuracy from Barisic to put the ball in, knew exactly where he was. As you say, Craig, the defender had no idea where that ball was because he hit it so cleanly and so perfectly that it was going right in the bottom corner. But I missed that.
Oh, no, I'll tell you something. If anything summed the game up, it was that chance, and I'll tell you why. If you go back and watch it back, Ayer actually celebrates a clearance at home. I mean, he's delighted with himself, you know, and he's having a wee beer. You know, that said it all. He's like, oh, well done, you know, I've kept it down to 2-0. You know what I mean? So it was beautiful to see, but no, watch back, if you can get Sky's highlights, it's tremendous. It's described as a great clearance.
Would there have been Andy Walker by any chance, was it? No?
We must have played well because even Andy Walker admitted that Celtic had no answers, you know what I mean?
Well. through gritted teeth.
Through a cup of salty tears.
On the 84th minute, there was a coming together with Morelos and Duffy. It was really nothing in it. Morelos didn't do anything apart from stand his ground, and Duffy fell over his legs when he was going for the ball. Duffy ended up pushing Morelos, where Morelos fell to the ground, beaten, runs over and decides to book Morelos first, and then he looked as if Duffy was going to get away with it, and he ended up getting booked for it as well. So I don't know what Morelos done, mind you, but you know, that was just Duffy trying to get Morelos into trouble, which I suppose it kind of worked in a way. But if folk are going to start talking about the Morelos slap in the back of the head of Brown, then you just need to look at the Duffy issue there, because he was pushing folk about the place. Anyway, Morelos came off a minute later and Itton came on. 87th minute, it was a free kick from 30 yards by Tavernier, up and over the wall, was looking like it was going just over the bar, but no chances taken by the keeper, who palms it over for the corner. In the 89th minute, to round off the game, Arfield off and Aribo on, so getting a couple of minutes there just to bleed them back into the team after a wee spell out. But an outstanding result, a great performance, as we've said, didn't need to get a second gear. We've got the measure of Celtic now, and I think that's proven. They're shiting themselves, and I think that was proven even before the game kicked off. They don't want to play us. That performance was a very measured, a very professional performance, and it's much like what we've seen in the European performances, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The three guys in midfield were the perfect three to play in this game. As you said before, Derek, maybe playing Jack and Kamara is maybe just a bit too defensive, the type of, you know, the two type of players we'd be playing if we were playing, you know, a top European team. But he got the balance absolutely perfect. I thought Kamara, you know, Golson got man of the match. I spoke about Hellander. I thought Kamara topped them all. I thought he was absolutely tremendous in the ball. He was never wasteful. His positioning was tremendous. He's running with the ball. I mean, even on the attack, he looked as if he could cause problems in the attack, which we don't see a lot of. I thought he was tremendous. Davis in there as the sort of real calming head in there. And, you know, Arfield, who's been brilliant for us, recently had to be in there for us as well. So those midfield three, I thought, were absolutely tremendous. Scott Brown and co never got a sniff, especially in the second half. They just controlled it completely. And just, as you say, Derek, I'm really not being cocky saying that this was a tremendous performance. It was just extremely professional, controlled all the way, and, you know, just absolutely delighted that we did it in their patch, and they just had nothing to answer us. It was just great to see.
And I think the other thing as well that really pleased me, the points you've made there about, you know, the guys' performances are spot on. I thought, as you say, that you know, Kamara was absolutely tremendous. He had some moments in the game that were just superb. But the depth of your bench was really pleasing for me. You're looking at that going, maybe before we've had, you know, plan A isn't working, we've maybe struggled a wee bit, but you're actually looking to the bench going, if somebody's having a nightmare or there's an injury or whatever, there's depth there to bring on, and even change the style of play we had, which is very good. And to me, the most important thing about the game was it rounded off that first quarter of the season really well. It's negated their game in hand, and give us a really solid base to build on for the rest of the season. Having had a tougher quarter of the season than they had, you know, the random fixture generator seemed to be quite kind to Celtic. If you look at it now, we've been away to Parkhead, we've been away to Pittodrie, we've been away to Easter Road. So another test coming ahead in a couple of weeks with Kilmarnock, but I think positive that we can actually now go and overcome the games that I think we're in good shape, and it's just up to us to continue just to play the way we are, you know, and I think now there's competition for places. So, you know, if the guys are off form, they know there's somebody there to come in, and I think that's definitely healthy. We're in good shape. It was a great day, and it's rounded off a really, really good start to the season for us.
Yep. I think the main thing we've got to take out of it, and you've seen that with the reaction after the game with the players and the management, there was no overreacting in terms of celebrating. There was a few fist bumps and all that kind of thing, obviously different because there was no fans in the stadium, but it was measured as well in the celebrations, because the job's nowhere near done. And I know there's a lot of Celtic fans on the phone and saying, oh, the league's over. That's a load of bollocks. The league's nowhere near over. But anyway, what was rather hilarious, that, you know, comeuppance and karma, the Groin Brigade before the game posted a video of themselves putting posters up all over Glasgow and all over Glasgow landmarks. Right after the great game, Rangers official Twitter put a tweet up with a screenshot of Golson scoring superimposed onto a bridge over the Clyde, and the caption, "Put that on a poster."
Absolutely brilliant.
Whoever that person running that Twitter site is, they need a raise.
Yeah, no,
true. I know that one social media for the day, it has to be said. That was absolutely tremendous. And again, very good. How much have we been sitting back allowing these to take the piss at us, you know what I mean? And we're getting our act together on the pitch. Certainly we've got our act together off the pitch, and that there, just kind of taking them on at their own game, is just, it was lovely. Raised a chuckle. And my early onset hangover, it was excellent, you know.
So in the league, we've played 11, won 9, drawn 2, lost 0, scored 26, conceded only 3, goal difference plus 23, and we're on 29 points. So we're 4 ahead of Celtic, who've got a game in hand. We're also 5 goal difference ahead of them as well. We're 7 ahead of Aberdeen. They're playing tonight. They've still got a game in hand. They're currently winning 4-1, I think it is, and we're 8 ahead of Hibs. So certainly as you said, Craig, the first quarter of the season, it's went near perfect, not quite perfect, but it's been pretty positive all the same. Now we've got a severe run of games, and that's starting on Thursday night. We've got 6 games in 18 days, in my account, so a game every 3 days. The difference is, I mean, Celtic have got the exact same as well. They're playing the same amount of games in the same space of time. They've probably got arguably the harder running this time. So, and the way we play, and the compared with how they're playing just now, their confidence is low. They've not been playing great on the run-up to the Old Firm game there. And as you alluded to there, Craig, is we've got a strength and depth of squad. Celtic don't seem to have that. So the game's starting off on Thursday the 22nd of October away to Standard Liège in the Europa League Group D Game 1. It's a 17:55 kickoff. Then it's Sunday the 22nd of October at home to Livingston in the Premiership. That's a 15:00 kickoff. Thursday the 29th of October at home to Lech Poznan, Europa League Game 2, 8:00 kickoff. Sunday the 1st of November away to Killy. That's in the Premiership on at it's a midday kickoff. Thursday the 5th of November away to Benfica, Europa League 17:55 kickoff. And just before the international break again, Sunday the 8th of November at home to Hamilton in the Premiership. That's another 15:00 kickoff. And I know we bemoan the international breaks, but I think after this run we'll certainly need it.
Aye, there's a lot of games coming up, Derek, and as both you and Craig said, tough game away to Kilmarnock. But the thing that I'm noticing as well, Derek, is it's more sort of horses for courses with the team now. I think he's picking his team, you know, to go out and, you know, tackle the game in hand rather than just trying to keep a select players on the park. Obviously, you've got to go with guys that are in form. But when the whole squad is on form and you can bring guys in, like we saw a few weeks ago, Jordan Jones coming in and making a huge contribution to the game. You've got Hadji, as well, that comes on and makes a huge contribution to the game. We've got Ruth coming back. We've still got our new signing, the South African guy, Zungu, to come into the team as well. It's looking great, and it's the amount of options that we've got are fantastic, and it must be great on the training field as well, because surely these guys are trying to outdo each other, which is, you know, just going to raise their game even more. So, you know, bring it on. I'm really looking forward to it.
100%. I think we've built a good squad. I think the squad will get used, you know, in the coming weeks, and I think that makes again a big difference. I think that's where European football will help us, is that, you know, everybody will feel involved. You know, the coaching staff will be able to sit down with each player and say, look, you're going to get some minutes in the coming weeks, and you need to be ready and you need to be hungry. And I'm pretty confident we've got the squad to be able to cope with that. All bodes well. Very positive at the minute. Looking forward to Thursday night.
Absolutely. So we'll leave it there, and we'll now go into the classic match.
And there it is! The final whistle's gone! Rangers have won the European Cup Winners' Cup!
So, Dave, what classic match have you got for us this time?
I have a game from our way back in 1993, Derek, and it was a time when we had all of our sort of star players playing the likes of McCoist and Haitley up front, which is always, you know, great games to know to cover, to go back and watch these guys play. The game that I've chosen is a game against Aberdeen, and it took place on the 30th of March 1993. The Rangers lineup on that day were Andy Gorham wearing a very sporting pair of what looked like blue pyjama bottoms tucked into his socks for some reason. So it's a Gorham in goals. We had Davy Robertson, Richard Goff, John Brown and Davy McPherson in defence. Stuart McCall, Ian Ferguson, Trevor Stephen, Ian Durant, Ali McCoist, Mark Haitley and Peter Hoostra. Playing for Aberdeen, some, you know, well-known names in the Aberdeen team. Theo Snelders, Gary Smith, Alec McLeish, Stuart McKimmy, Roy Aitken, Paul Kane, Richardson, Paul Mason, Duncan Shearer, Scott Booth and Miksu Patalainen. So, you know, a lot of very well-known international players in the Aberdeen team back then. So it was going to be a difficult game, and it was certainly a cracker in the first half. Because both teams really going for it at this stage. Obviously, I forgot to mention the game played at Ibrox, so, you know, the home fans, you know, we were really up for it. I was actually at this game, so when I was watching it back, I can remember the game and really thinking, you know, it was a hard-going game for us, because Aberdeen really did put a lot of pressure on. So, early chance in the game for Aberdeen, Paul Mason on the left with a low cross across the face of the goal, thankfully cleared, the last-ditch clearance by John Brown. Then it was Rangers up the other end. Stuart McCall dinking the ball through for Ian Ferguson. He's seen him charging through. He was about to unleash a shot, but it was cleared by Smith out for a corner. From that actual corner, Stephen took it, and Richard Goff climbed above everybody and blasted the ball just over the bar. So chances at both ends. Then it was a free kick to Aberdeen, which was a long-range shot by Duncan Shearer, thankfully straight at Andy Gorham. Then up the other end, Ali McCoist hits a fantastic shot after Mark Catley had laid him off. That was saved by Snelders and out for the corner. And again, from that corner, it was cleared, but then back in again by Peter Hoekstra, and Richard Goff up again. He headed the ball down to the bottom corner, but a fantastic save by Snelders still to keep it 0-0. But then it was Aberdeen, Scott Booth. He managed to break away and was in the clear, and he fires a shot low. Andy Gorham saved the ball with his feet, and imagine eventually the ball got cleared. So it really was end-to-end stuff. Then a great chance to open the scoring for Rangers. Peter Hoekstra sees Davy Robertson, of all people, making that trademark overlapping run that he used to do. He plays a fantastic ball through. Davy Robertson hits a great shot, but it was deflected out for the corner. But unfortunately, that never came to anything. Then coming up to the end of the half, the 38th minute, a half chance for Mark Catley in the box. He had a sort of spin and a shot, low shot, saved by Theo Snelders. And then a great chance for Aberdeen, the 40th minute, with Duncan Shearer. He had a header, free header, which just went past the post. Is a big let off for Rangers there. And then just before half-time, Duncan Shearer again. He was played through, but a great last-ditch tackle by Richard Goff keeps it at 0-0 at half-time. So it was a pulsating first half. Great stuff to watch for the neutral. Chances at both ends, still 0-0. But into the second half, Rangers did become more dominant, taking the game to Aberdeen, because most of the play was in the Aberdeen half at that stage. And then on, thankfully, on the 65th minutes, Rangers got the breakthrough with a fantastic goal.
Well, the pace just continues. This is great play by McCall. Paisley lays it off. It's Ferguson! That is a brilliant goal by Rangers.
Stuart McCall, it was running down the left wing. He actually beats two men, something you didn't see a lot of with Stuart McCall. He plays the ball into Mark Catley at the edge of the box. Catley sees Ian Ferguson running in at the edge of the box. He lays it off to him, and Ian Ferguson hits a thunderous low strike into the bottom left-hand corner. Past Snelders, fantastic goal, 1-0 to Rangers. And then Rangers really going for it, trying to get the second goal. It was Peter Hoekstra. He lofts the ball into the box. And there was Stuart McCall with a header from a tight angle. But a great save by Theo Snelders. Stuart McCall had a fantastic game for us this game. Then Trevor Stephen with a long-range shot, which was just over the bar. And then another chance just a couple of minutes after that for Stephen. This time he hits a volley, which came from a Mark Hatley cross, but straight at Snelders. So it was getting to the end of the game. Rangers really wanting a second goal to seal the points, and thankfully in the last minute of the game we got it.
This is Trevor Stephen, it's in it, Hatley! And it's gone in! Ali McCoist! 89 minutes! Ali McCoist gets his 48th goal of the season for Rangers! And that must surely tie up not just the match, but the championship itself. Trevor Stephen played it in, and it was Hitley's head on, and that was McCoy's to steal it past Theo Snelders for a brilliant goal. Rangers 2, Aberdeen 0.
It was a textbook McCoy's-Hitley attack. There was a free kick swung in from the left. Mark Hitley leaps up, heads the ball. It was actually going wide, but there was Ali McCoy's to run in and redirect the header into the goal with a wee glancing header past Theo Snelders into the net to make it 2-0 to Rangers. A fantastic reaction there by Ali McCoist, and that was actually his 48th goal of the season, which is quite incredible. So Rangers run out 2-0 winners at the end of that game. Tremendous game to watch. As I say, I can remember being there. I was only, I think, 18 at the time. I just got my season ticket, and it was a fantastic season for us. Going back to my favourite kit of all time, the Adidas kit with the stripes in each side, three stripes in each side. A tremendous season for us. some fantastic players on show, and just great to see McCoist and Haley back in action again, because they really were the deadliest striking partnership that I've seen at Rangers. Absolutely tremendous. I don't know if you boys will remember much about that, but you must have enjoyed watching it back.
Certainly for myself. A lot of similar things. You've said there, Davey, love that strip. Absolutely, just it's iconic. The way strip was the same, the fact that it was kind of like a reverse type thing. Loved the kit. Loved the team, you know, really identified with them. You know, it was fully, you know, Scottish players and, you know, a couple of English lads in there. And I think the start lineup was just Peter Hooster was sort of the one foreigner.
Yeah.
Obviously, we had that European run as well. It was just a really, really good... a good side, you know, and Aberdeen were good at that time, you know. That I mean, obviously they finished second that year. And a few things kind of stuck out watching it back was actually just how good the, you know, the McCoist and Haley partnership is. You know, you know there was a lot of goals between the two of them. You alluded to Ali's obviously 48th goal, which was unbelievable looking back on it.
Yeah.
But the link up play for Haley through the game is actually unbelievable. So he's not come off with a, you know, with a goal, but he's laid a few off. He's brought a few others into play, and it was just, he's the one that always kind of sticks out with me, that you just forget how good Mark Haley was. You know, absolutely tremendous, and when he was on his game, he was unplayable. And Ian Ferguson again as well. Obviously in later years we started to get boys like Gascoigne and that in there, but this game also hits home actually again what a very, very good football player Ian Ferguson was, and he had a marvellous shot for outside the box. Again, a kind of trademark goal for him. It was just, it's just classic Rangers really, isn't it? When you watch it, it was I'm glad you picked it. I really enjoyed watching that one back, and again, myself being at the game, you remember the atmosphere when you played them, because you knew you were going to get a game, and on that occasion we raised our level, and really, that, when you listen back to the commentary, I think it was Jerry McNee that said that pretty much put us out of sight in the title race. Tremendous. A really, really great Rangers team.
And the fact, you know, Aberdeen filled the whole of the lower of the Broomloan stand as well, which is incredible. So it's it was a great game. The atmosphere was brilliant. And as I say, going back, me and Derek have spoken about that before, just about how... I'll not say that it's forgotten, because, you know, if you speak to a lot of Rangers fans that watched them, but Mark Haley was absolutely sensational for Rangers. He was the perfect target man. He was fast. He was powerful. The control that he had on the ball, his ability in the air was second to none. I don't think we've had a striker since him that's as good. I mean, Dado Purcell maybe came... in that sort of, you know, great in the air, but still wasn't a patch on how good Mark Haley was in the air. We've had Jelavich as well, it was good in the air, but again, no a patch on how good Haley was. I don't think we've had a striker as good as him in the air since. He was so good. And even, you know, a player I thought was absolutely sensational as well. So calm. His accuracy was fantastic. It was Trevor Stephen. He was a phenomenal player for us as well. I could talk for hours about that team because it's some of the players we had. But I'm just glad that we are recognising how good Mark Haley was, because he was just tremendous. And as I said, Derek, me and you have spoken about that before. But again, when you go back and watch it, you do realise how good he actually was for us.
I think we're really hammered at home is obviously when McCoist broke his leg, and then he also became that sort of main focal point for goals as well. He had it all really when you look back, and and you can see that you can totally understand why he went and played in, you know, like say Serie A and Ligue 1 and played for England, whatever. You know, he was a genuinely class player.
Yep.
And you're right, I don't think we've seen the like since. So again, that's where we're lucky guys that we've grew up watching these boys, you know.
Definitely.
Absolutely. So another great classic match from Dave, and no doubt he'll have another one the next time, unless he's been lazy again. So.
Oh, see, you're not going to let that lie, are you? It happens maybe twice in about 8 years. You're unbelievable.
Listen, Dave, just get a 2 or 3 weeks, and you'll be able to do a classic match, and just use the tape for us talking about Rangers Celtic at Park Heid. you know the one where we took the piss with them in the rain.
Exactly,
park.
That'll be
a classic match in years to come, mate.
Definitely.
So we'll now go on to the news. So a few bits and pieces to cover as ever, and Dave alluded to it earlier, is that the long-rumoured transfer saga of Bongani Zungu has been completed on a season-long loan with an agreement to buy at the end. He was in the final year of his contract at Amiens, however, he actually penned a new one-year extension, so there's going to be a fee rumoured to be about £2.7 million, apparently. 27-year-old South African international midfielder announced on transfer deadline day, and Rangers announced it on Twitter with a still game clip of one of their characters shouting, South Africa! Absolutely class.
Well, I opened it up, and there was only the one line in it. And it said,
South Africa! I forgot all about that!
Yep, as we said before, Derek, whoever dealing with the social media side for Rangers has been absolutely brilliant and gave us all a wee laugh as well, so great stuff.
So don't know too much about him. He's just a physical player, apparently, and obviously the other podcasts have had a few interviews with people who do know him and say he's a really good player. So he's obviously in quarantine now because obviously he was in an outside country. Hopefully in the next kind of week or so we'll get him into the squad at least and training. It'll be probably a few weeks later before we actually see him back and see him in the actual team. But hopefully he's been included in the European squad, so obviously he's well thought of.
Yeah, I mean, it looks as if I'd like to think they've done their homework on him, Derek, but it's been going on for so long that he's been linked that they've obviously been watching this guy for some time and trying to get over the line. So, they've obviously got the confidence to put him into the squad, you know, for the European game. They're wanting him to get involved as soon as possible. So here's hoping, that he's going to be a class player for us.
I think it's a good bit of business. I think from what I can gather, just picking up bits of information, listening to different outlets and whatever, he seems to be more of a kind of Davis type player, but probably maybe a bit more kind of legs, and apparently just a real good eye for a pass. So I think he's more kind of geared towards obviously the having an alternative to Davis, whereas in the past, as we alluded to earlier on the pod there, when Davis isn't play, we play maybe Jack and Kamara and we're a bit too slow. So again, it just adds to these kind of squad options, and you're looking at the fixtures over the coming weeks and you're hoping that this guy's going to be able to come in and do a job domestically, and maybe give Davis a bit of time off without us having to revert back to type. So again, I think the signings we've made, certainly since Wilson came in, I think our recruitment's been pretty tight, and we do seem to do our due diligence. So, no, I'm pretty positive about that one as well.
Yep, and obviously the window's closed and we've still managed to keep all our big players, including Kent, Tavernier, Goldson and, rather surprisingly, Morelos. Apparently Torino had a deadline day bid for him of a loan agreement with an agreement to buy at the end, which was turned down. Lille were the only confirmed offers of around £16 million, which was obviously rejected. It's a bit strange because I really don't think we would have bought Itten and Roof if we expected them to stay, so there's got to be a balance in books issue at some point. I know we've made a shit ton of money from the European campaign next year. Hopefully we can do the same. It just came out today, right enough, that the fees that we're going to get paid for it is going to be slightly reduced because obviously the UEFA are facing a deficit because of COVID. But, it's a bit of a strange one, that.
As I say, I think we were all expecting him to go, Derek. I think, you know, there wasn't a single person out there who was expecting him still to be in our team. You know, at this stage, I'm taking it as a blessing more than anything else because I absolutely love the guy. I think he's a fantastic striker. He's just, you know, we spoke about it at length tonight. His role has changed. He's maybe went off form about a bit in front of goal with everything that's happened, but I'm certainly delighted that he's still here.
No, definitely. I think the same. I thought Alfredo's time had sort of was up, but you know, I'm glad he's here. I think the European money could potentially, as you say, help offset the fact that we didn't get that fee in for him. Because I do agree, I don't think we would have outlaid for roofing it, and had we expected to keep Morelos. But certainly, I think probably we would maybe find the impact of that in the next transfer window, where I wouldn't expect us to be awash with cash to strengthen. But as I say, where we're at now, and the fact that the next transfer window is sort of so close, I think I'm pretty confident as to where we are for the season ahead, you know. And I agree with Dave, it's a blessing that he's still here.
Yeah, as you said, the next transfer window, if everything's still going ahead that way, that is, it's going to be in January, so you're only looking at a couple of months, so a bit strange that as well. Anyway, you know, Dave, I don't get really involved in rumours because
I was hoping you were going to ask me this, Derek. I was hoping.
Because folk make up shite and they just do it for likes, and I think we've seen that over the last couple of days as well. But strong rumour is Jack Wilshere, and he's meant to be interested in moving to us, but I don't know, because I've kept away from it and he's maybe weighing up his options just now. A bit odd, his contract was mutually terminated at West Ham on $100K per week, apparently, there. So the guy's obviously a talent, not quite the talent he was when he broke through to the scene, you know, about 10 years ago, but obviously due to injuries. Much like Rossiter, though, we don't get him if he doesn't have these injury issues. So I kind of don't want players like that now. I don't know what your thoughts are.
If it's true, Derek, if it's true, and as I say, I sent you a thing, there was a lot of the speculation, especially last night on Twitter, where somebody had either done a good Photoshop, but it certainly looked quite a, you know, convincing shot of, you know, his Instagram post, you know, inside Ibrox, which is probably was somebody just taking the piss, but it does build a lot of speculation. It's I think it's quite hilarious that he's suddenly now got about 50,000 new followers on Instagram that are all Rangers supporters, because when that picture hit, I had texted you and a couple of other folk, and straight away they were able to tell me, oh well, I've checked his Twitter page, his Instagram page, and I can't see anything. And I thought, you know, that's quite incredible that's happened. A lot of people have, if it is true, and there has been a hell of a lot of speculation about it, if it is true, a lot of people have likened it to the Joey Barton situation where that didn't work out. I think the main difference being that Joey Barton was seen as the saviour of our team at the time and was seen as the main transfer, you know, of the Rangers team in, you know, about 6 or 7 years, whereas this would be us signing a potentially, you know, quality player, but knowing that he does have fitness issues. The one thing that I'll say is that he has been very vocal himself on social media to the West Ham fans to tell them that he is fit. And he certainly wasn't happy about sitting and picking up a wage. He was desperate to get out in the field and still desperate to play. And he put some other things out on social media showing out everybody how hard he's been at training as well, which again has put a lot of speculation on the, you know, that's him proving that he's fit, that he can come and sign for us. So we'll have to wait and see. I like the rumours, Derek, because it certainly gets the people on the other side of the city really foaming at the mouth as well, which is always good on social media. And again, we'll just have to wait and see. His agent has got a lot of links to players and, you know, at Rangers already and stuff like that. So I don't know if it's hearsay or not, but he's certainly, a lot of the main newspapers as well are linking him to us as well. So we'll just have to see. If he is fit, a fantastic addition to the squad, he really would be. He would certainly get a lot of buzz, a lot of press coverage. But again, it might just be pie in the sky. I don't know.
Listen, if I could just very quickly chip in on it, I think there's, it's, to me, probably feels a bit more like rumour than reality. But listen, if there's a deal there to be done with Jack Wilshere, you know, a deal at the end of the season, for example, and if we could make the numbers work, you'd do it. You know what I mean? If he's, if you get even, you know, 15 games out of him fit, he's in my view, he's the best midfield player in the league. So you do it and you take the punt this season, all seasons. Do you know what I mean? You go for it. If he's no fit and he doesn't play, we're more than equipped to cover that. But nah, as long as the numbers work and it's not going to be a deal that upsets the squad, I think you do it. 100%.
I'm away to check Rangers rumours, the new guys, just to try and find out where the latest is on them.
So, going into the next piece of news here, obviously I mentioned the Euro squad and Defoe, Edmondson and Jones have been left out. So I would say, unsurprising, with them three you can only pick so many players. So that leaves us with McGregor, McLaughlin, Tavernier, Goldson, Hellander, Balogun, Barisic, Bassey, Jack, Hadji, Davis, Kent, Zungu, Aribo, Arfield, Kamara, Stewart, Itten, Barker, Morales and Roof. So certainly, all those players you can't really argue with. Defoe, you know, given his age and the fact that we've already got three strikers in there, we've really got our quota, so you can only have so many. Just unfortunately, we can't take everyone.
Yeah, I know, it's a huge squad, Derek, but that is, you know, it's impressive, isn't it? Going into these games still with players left over that, you know, are more than capable of doing a job in the Premier League. So, you know, we've spoken about the depth of the squad already, but that's, you know, really is impressive on paper. And here's hoping that they can, you know, they can do the job out there that we know they're capable of.
I'll stick my neck at the new boys and tell you we'll get out of that group. No problem.
I love the enthusiasm, mate. I really hope so.
I'm very confident we'll get out of that group. We're more than equipped to get out of that group. There you go. That's a prediction. You can hold me to that.
Next thing is, despite being delayed for a few days for technical reasons, whatever they could be, I don't know, charges against Gerrard by the SFA for his comments after the Dundee United game were found unproven. I'm really not sure how you can get an unproven. They were brought up, they brought him up on charges based on his comments, which were filmed. The clear evidence of what he said. They claimed that Gerrard basically had stated the ref was biased. So surely to bring the charges, they must have thought that in the first place.
Yep.
Surely it can be only guilty or not guilty on that case. So, as we all said, a waste of time, and more importantly, a complete waste of money. And interestingly, the Motherwell director, Andrew Wilson, has been brought up on the same charges after his comments about Bobby Madden after our 5-1 over Motherwell. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. His comments were more blatant in terms of insinuating bias there. But, you know, typical SFA as per usual.
Yeah, we knew it was going to happen, Derek. It was an absolute nonsense, and it's been even farcical how it all came about in the end. And it's just, again, the powers that be at Scottish football aren't exactly, you know, painting themselves in a positive light, and that was just a complete farce, wasn't it?
Yep,
that was a joke. It was an absolute joke, like you say. It's to me, it just felt like a deflection tactic at the time. But in a global pandemic where the government body's gone for loans to keep things afloat, we go and waste money on an absolutely nonsense charge. It was embarrassing. It just makes us look Mickey Mouse, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What a transition that was as well from yourself there, because the next comment was about SFA having to take out a £5 million loan from the UK government to cover the shortfall in income as a result of COVID. Hampden has been used as collateral, guaranteed against any future money owed to the SFA from UEFA TV contracts, kind of like the ticketers deal where they've secured it against, you know, future income. I mean, this is the daft thing. They agreed a £5 million deal to buy Hampden, and of that £5 million, £2.5 million was actually donated to them. So they never actually had the money in the first place to buy Hampden. They had to get the money donated to them. So, as you said, they're fanning about on trumped up joke charges when they don't have fucking money to run the game. It's an absolute joke, but that's a story for another day, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Shareholder Stuart Gibson has invested another £5 million into the club through a share issue, with £8 million worth of shares being allocated in total. That makes him the fourth largest shareholder. The other shareholders get diluted, obviously, and the other £3 million worth of investment were made by the three Bears, George Taylor, Douglas Park and George Letham. So fantastic to see money still getting pumped in, and maybe that's what's funding the money for the players, that because we never sold Morelos.
Yeah, possibly, Derek. But again, it's all you know, large sums of money coming in. When we see the amount of, you know, the money that we've made from our European exploits over the last few seasons, you know that the club is getting run in the correct way. I know the forces of darkness on the other side of the city will try and convince everybody that that's not the case. And mentally ill Phil will put his blogs out and whatever, telling everybody that Admin 18 is coming soon and stuff like that. But it's really not things, you know. After years and years of absolute shambles and, you know, a joke of the way that things have been run, the club is being run properly now by guys who are, you know, interested in the club and the club only, which is great to see. So it's, you know, it's great. The club's on the up, both off and on the park. And that's really what we, us as fans, you know, are looking for. That's it. Stability at the club off the field, and you know, real progress on the field. We can't ask for any more than that.
I totally think all positive people want to invest. I'm not a money man, so that's all I'll say. It's just nice to see that people feel confident enough in the business that they want to put their money up. So it's all good.
Yep. Next thing here is the demolition of Edmondson House has finally begun. Interestingly, though, 83 residents have been notified of the new Edmondson House getting built. Latest details from at Seafarer Michael were that there was 8 objections and 1 in support. 2 of the objections he's shown were absolutely farcical, complaining about the noise, the parking, the facade not being going to be nice to look at. It was too close to the person's flat. What exactly do they want? Right now, before the demolition, it was a derelict, dangerous and ugly-looking building. So the point is, had that building been up to code, then it would be getting used largely for what we've got planned for the new build anyway. So it's going to generate, yeah, it's going to have issues with occasional parking and occasional noise, but you chose to live right next to a football stadium. You're going to get this kind of thing from time to time.
You can't get much worse with the parking on a match day at Ibrox, can you? And then, as you say, the other one is they didn't think that it was going to look nice. When you look at the state of the Edmondson House has been for years and years, I mean, anything, you know, would be an improvement there. So I don't know what they're looking for, as you say, Derek. I'm rather farcical in my opinion. It's going to create a lot more, you know, jobs and, you know, things happening in that area when it's built. So can only be good things for the local community. You know, I can see if you support that mob, you know, you're not wanting to see us do anything positive, and maybe, you know, that's what it's down to at the end of the day with these guys. But the excuses were pretty poor, eh?
Well, listen, I'll tell you a true story as well, right? See, just where the fan zone is at Edmondson House.
Uh-huh.
I was at a game, I think it was last season with my boy, and we were in the fan zone, and there was a young woman hanging out her kitchen window, being sick out onto the street.
God, no.
While her husband or boyfriend patted her back. So if that's the standard of people putting in objections, I think we can just move on and get the work done, guys, you know.
Oh, man.
And the last piece of news I've got here is Rangers announced that they've signed a landmark deal with Indian broadcaster Star Sports to show exclusive rights to SPFL games for the season. So what Hart and Hand found out is the SPFL basically gave the rights away to Indian broadcasters last year with the view of getting a deal in the back of it. Well, the SPFL never. So Rangers ended up buying the rights for a nominal fee off the SPFL and have sold them for a massive profit into this Star Sports. So just amazing for Rangers. We effectively control that. We're the ones that make the profit out of that and other clubs. But what exactly does Doncaster do for his £400,000 a year?
I know. Quite quite incredible, Derek. And again, this is positive, because if that's what we can do, you know, to sell our games to other countries, who knows what this could bring for us. We've been talking about this for a long time as well, about selling the rights to our game. And if that's how easy it was for us to, you know, as you say, to buy for a nominal fee and, you know, sell it on and make a huge profit out of it, you know, it's fantastic. And here's hoping that there's other countries with billions of people in their you know, their subscriber base that would want to do that, because that could be something massive if we could get that going in other countries as well. So here's hoping that that's the start of something, you know, similar in other places. But, you know, great news and great work by the guys behind the scenes. They're absolutely brilliant.
Yep, tremendous bit of work here. As you say, it's just, again, another example of how the club's been run in the right manner, and we're spotting these opportunities. It's tremendous, really good, yep. Really good.
So, man stunned after pulling 17-foot alien tapeworm from his anus.
An alien tapeworm.
Well, an alien one, yes, allegedly.
Or just...
A man in Thailand was stunned when he realised that the cause of his stomach pain was a 17-foot tapeworm, which he had to pull from his rear end. You can watch the footage of the writhing worm here.
I don't want to go into any of these sites that you're looking at, Derek. I really don't. Whatever you do, don't post a link on Twitter, for God's sake.
Duan Chang.
Why exactly is it that you do when you're not watching radio?
Exactly. Exactly.
Duang Twang Dachodi had been suffering from the stomachache on Monday at his home in Nakhon Sang in the northeast of the country. So he plonked himself down on the toilet, as you do. But the 34-year-old was alarmed when he felt something moving against his skin. Oh, and when he looked between his legs, he saw a long yellow worm stretching down into the water. The discovery scared the shit out of him. Well, no shit, right? He realised... He shot up from the toilet, and at this point, he realised the creature was hanging from you know where. The taxi driver proceeded to tug the worm from his back passage and eventually removing all 17 feet of it.
17 feet? No way. I have no chance.
He said, I couldn't believe how long it was. I kept pulling. It was still stuck in my bottom. When the whole worm came out, I measured it and it was 5 metres long. I thought it was an alien. It was disgusting. The thing had been living inside me for a long time. The doctors told him that it came from eating raw meat, which isn't too surprising that given his favourite meal is quinoa, a spicy raw beef salad dish that is popular in the region of Thailand where he's from.
Oh so, my God.
And you wonder where COVID comes from, eh?
Oh my God! I mean, really, that's what's the Irvin Welsh book, which is all about the tapeworm and the guy's inside the guy's stomach? Is it filth? And that's in the book. You keep hearing these, keep seeing these strange things in the book, and it turns out it's a tapeworm. But there you go. I didn't realise they could grow that long, Derek. But you learn something new every day in this podcast, don't you?
Educational as entertaining. So, on that rather odd note, yes, we shall end the podcast here. So, as ever, if you want to check out some of our stuff that we do, you can go to our website, which is iReadyPodcast.wordpress.com, and there you can find a list that still needs to be updated of our matches and our podcasts. So, all that's left to say is, Craig, thanks very much for coming on again. Would you like to plug any of the stuff that you do?
Yeah, no, just if anybody's listening, come along to join the Fear No Foe. I think we're 265 members, so we're slowly keeping up. It's been a good wee kind of community that we've got going there. So feel free, come along, like it, share it with your friends. And just a wee bit of news that I don't know if you guys had noticed, but just when you're doing your news part, obviously benefits the club, but they've got an official tie-in with Five Stars Events now, so all Five Stars Events
moving forward will be directly linked to Rangers Football Club. So if you check that out on the club's website. So a really good news in terms of Legends events will now, as I say, benefit the club. Exclusively tied in with iStar, so I just urge your listeners to go and check that out. Again, very good news for the club moving forward that Legends events will I'll benefit everyone, so all good.
Yep, no, we spoke about that on the last pod, and of course our mutual friend Graham Clark is involved in that we had on the podcast about a year ago. Again, we were in their first Ricky Neal, get it right up, yeah, I'm only joking. Graham's a good friend of ours, and you know, it's great for him and great for the club and stuff like that. So you know, all these Rangers groups and that all coming together, which is absolutely fantastic. Good stuff.
So thanks for listening and goodbye.
Take care, folks. Goodbye.
Thanks again, boys.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
I just want to... Oh! I just want to smack them.